Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Premier Foods 2016-17 Quarter One Trading Update conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday the 21st of July, 2016. I'd now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Gavin Derby. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning to you all. It's Gavin here. I'm obviously joined by Alistair Murray, our Chief Financial Officer. I know it's a very busy morning for you all, so I will try and keep my introductory comments as brief as possible, then we can move straight into Q&A. We're talking about our first quarter of the financial year 2016-17. I suppose the most obvious place to start is that I'm very pleased to report our fourth consecutive quarter of sales growth. We all know that sales and revenue really are an absolutely critical KPI in this industry at this moment. I'm particularly pleased at what I would describe as the depth of that sales growth, because we had our grocery business in growth, sweet treats business in growth. We had branded growth and non-branded growth, and then as a subset of grocery, actually our international business in growth, as you would hope as well. This is a growth of 1.9% in the first quarter, and I guess the point I'm making is it's broadly based, and we're beginning to fire as we accelerate our growth on all the different cylinders of the business. I'm very clear and pleased to reinforce that we stand behind our full-year sales guidance, which as you recall, we doubled from 1%-2% to 2%-4% with this 1.9% first quarter. We, as we've always said, will accelerate into that range. We believe the strategy of investing in brands and new products is working. Those of you who were with us in Lifton would have seen not just the strategy, but a lot of detail in terms of how we're executing that strategy, and clearly, it is working. In terms of brands, I'd single out probably Bisto, Loyd Grossman, Cadbury, and Ambrosia. Within Cadbury, you'll recall we launched Amaze Bites in the last year. Loyd Grossman, the Gastro sub-brand range in pouches. Both of these examples of brands that are very well known, where innovations are tremendously different and transformative to the propositions beforehand, and the brands have responded well in terms of both sales and volumes in the quarter. We also made it very clear that in the financial year that we're headed into, that Ambrosia at the front end, Batchelors in a minute, in the second half of the year would be key. This first quarter, we have focused on Ambrosia with a TV campaign, the launch of Ambrosia Deluxe Custard, and our first steps into the frozen custard ice cream category as well. Big quarter for Ambrosia, and I'm pleased that it's responded, and therefore is one of the brands that I could pick out as supporting our 1.9% growth. We will have supported in the quarter both Ambrosia, Mr. Kipling, and Cadbury on TV, and we will have six more brands in the balance of the year. We'll support nine brands this year. We announced previously that we would invest between 42 million and 44 million, and that's a 22% increase in marketing. We have the marketing firepower within the plan to roll the strategy which we've outlined across all nine of our big brands with Ambrosia and Kipling. Ambrosia and Batchelors being particular incremental beneficiaries. Batchelors is very much an H2 focus, being a winter brand. We'll launch, as I've described before, a new range of high veg pots, as well as some innovative new soup products both in September and in November. Sweet treats has had a good start to the year, and we're particularly focused, as you know, on taking our cake brands into the convenience and snacking market. We had four SKUs to serve that new opportunity in April. We're now up to seven, as we added two more slice products, and we've put our iconic Mr. Kipling Cherry Bakewells in a two-pack for the first time. The sales force has now got seven products to sell as they roll out in the convenience channel. We also launched a range of Mr. Kipling cupcakes, which is a very new departure in singles and 12s during the quarter, which is doing very well exclusively with one major retailer. Now, I've focused on the investment, but of course, this investment is paid for ultimately by efficiencies that we're making in our supply chain, to stress once again. While that's a significant increase, 22% in marketing, it is funded from within the efficiencies we're making in the supply chain, and those programs are well on track. I mean, I would say, luckily towards the end of this introductory comment rather than the beginning, the environment is a challenging one. We all know about food price deflation running between 2%-3% negative, and Premier diverging now with growth, as I've described. We're all aware of the potential impacts of the vote on the 23rd of June. I would stress that on the range of very exposed to modestly or minimally exposed, then Premier is on the right end of that spectrum. We are predominantly a U.K. sales-focused company. 95% of our sales are in the U.K. 89% of the goods and services that we buy are in pounds and only the balance in dollars or euros. Indeed, you know, we have a big, as you know, international growth strategy, which is an export strategy. Clearly with the moves in exchange rate, you know, we now have more opportunity in terms of our pricing for our international business. Bottom line is, we're confident in the trajectory and the consistency and the depth. Our guidance is that expectations are unchanged and most importantly, I suppose, the expectation, our commitment to grow revenue at the range of 2%-4%. With that, as an introduction, we'll go to questions, please. Lawrence?
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you'd like to cancel that request, please press the hash key. That's star one for any questions or comments on the phones. We have had some coming in now, the first of which comes from the line of Declan Morrissey. Please ask your question.
Morning, Alistair. Just one question from me. Just in relation to the rollout of cake in the convenience channel. Just wondering if you could elaborate on that a bit further. You know, have you had any big wins or listings across the space? Are you going direct or are you using a wholesaler or a middleman? Maybe you can elaborate.
It's Gavin here. The strategy, Declan, is to build during the four quarters. Obviously, it's one of putting your infrastructure in place. You know, we've got a 10-person dedicated merchandising team. We've got 10 folks focused on selling through the key accounts, some of which are multiple grocers and some of which would be things like forecourt retailers, et cetera. Those folks are on plan in terms of building distribution. We are using, to your question, wholesalers, the likes of Kerryfresh, who you'll be well aware of, and Palmer & Harvey as logistics intermediaries. As I said in my introduction, we're pleased that we've added three more SKUs. Now the sales team's got seven SKUs to sell. It's a question of rolling out, building distribution and that's very much where we are. We feel we're, you know, I think as far as I can go at the moment is that we're very much on track. We're in an investment phase, but I consider it a really key initiative for the reasons I described before. It's incremental revenue and, you know, gross margin. From a gross margin perspective, it's certainly accretive, percentage-wise to, you know, the average of the business. I'm confident and we're very much on track.
Thank you, Gavin.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Martin Deboo. Please ask your question.
Morning, everybody. Martin Deboo at Jefferies. Can you just give me some color on the own label sales growth? It was clearly very striking in Q1. And we know in the past, you know, own label can be lumpy. So just thinking about how the year unfolds, is that indicative of the run rate in own label, or are there some one-offs in Q1 that we should be aware of? That's the question.
I think, Martin, it's Gavin, there are really two dimensions to this. Actually, I would think about the Knighton business as being B2B, not own label.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there is some own label in there, but it serves a powdered, and this is one component of the growth. That's why I'm starting with that piece. So it's B2B. The reason I kind of distinguish there is it's not like it's sitting much of it in the same categories that we sell brands, if you follow me. So it's not like we're selling private label versions of in the categories where predominantly we're selling brands. So B2B is an element of it. I mean, Knighton, as Alistair described in the past, was a business that needed to be turned around. And clearly, although there's a lot more to do on Knighton with its B2B business, it is in growth. So I think it will continue to be in growth. So that part of your question, I think it's not so likely to be lumpy. I think there will be growth in the B2B business of Knighton Foods. The rest of the non-branded sales is more in what you would see as retailer brands. And the cake business, which has been growing close to double digits for the more than one quarter, is an important piece of business. And again, I don't see that being lumpy either, candidly. We are finding, as we discussed at Carlton, I think a year ago when we were up there, the fact that we can genuinely sell the whole category in cake, and buyers are very interested in the branded proposition and the cake retailer branded proposition being, you know, one package. I've rarely seen that in my industry experience before, but I certainly see that in cake very strongly. And so we are where, you know, where we have capacity, where we have underutilized assets, and against the, you know, against strict financial hurdles, we are pushing hard on our retailer brand cake business. And so I, again, to your thought about whether it'll be lumpy, no, I think the cake business will be consistent. And those really are the major components of that number, candidly, the Knighton B2B business and the cake retailer brand business. And I think, you know, they will be consistent supporters of revenue growth.
Gavin, quick follow-up for it's Martin again. So I think you said when we were at Carlton, you were looking to get own labeling cake up to, gosh, I have to remember, I think it's 26% of sales or something, or some sort of medium-term target. If I've misremembered that, tell me. Is that still where you're seeing it?
I think that's possible. I mean, I think we're not, you know, I think we're kind of in the high teens.
Right. Okay.
I'll look to, if I've misspoken there, to Richard to straighten me out in a minute. But, you know, we do see opportunities. And obviously, there are one or two channels that you'll be aware of that are predominantly retailer brands.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those ones are, you know, we're serving those as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Most importantly, just, you know, the question that would then be in some people's mind is what impact does this have on margins? And I think, you know, we said also at Carlton that we do not see cake retailer brands as particularly dilutive of margins. I mean, and it's a mix of seasonal cake, you know, mince pies and things like that, which are huge for Kipling's, you know, huge for Premier, sorry, huge for Premier, and kind of ongoing 52-week retailer brand cake. And if you look at the blended margin of our retailer cake business, it's, you know, it's close to being in line with the average of the whole category. So, that explains why we are seeing strong revenue growth in this area, which is why you're asking the question, but why you've also seen kind of stable margins when you've looked at, you know, our half-yearly results. So 20% currently is the share of our sweet treats business, which is non-branded, 20%.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Ben Byrne. Please ask your question.
Good morning, guys. Just a quick follow-up on the non-branded. It seems like it's been pretty strong for the last four quarters. So I think was it contract wins for basically 2Q 15-16 when that started. I'm just wondering how, when we actually start lapping the initial contract wins from roughly four quarters ago, how does that start to look? Are we going to, because it seems that, you know, branded sales have improved and it's positive, but it's still around that, you know, 1% or slightly below level. It's been non-branded, which is really giving the kick towards the 2%. If that's, how is that going to go going forward? Because it seems like we're going to be lapping the contract wins.
Well, it's Alistair here, Ben. I suppose the answer is we have quite a strong market share in the sweet treats business, and therefore I think arguably you're right that it becomes tougher because there are fewer contracts to go for. But there certainly are contracts out there that we can go for, and we have the capacity. So that's not really stopping us doing it. So I think to that extent that's true. I think conversely, we still have Knighton sitting in this non-branded category, as Gavin described earlier, and we are really only now, you know, we've had control of the business for 8 weeks or whatever it is, you know, really starting to get that moving and to build the long-term strategies. And we certainly think that there's a lot of scope that we can continue to drive some growth in Knighton. So I think we've got that, and that's not limited in quite the same way as maybe you might argue the sort of pure private label businesses.
Okay, great. Knighton's was written down as well. So the profitability is turning around there as well, or is it pretty early days?
Yeah, it's early days. I mean, the guidance we gave was broadly break even, and I think that guidance stands.
Okay. So my main question was really going to be on the pension. So I know the triennial review on the pension was completed in April. For the pension trustee. So there was a pretty large gap last in April 13 between that valuation and the accounting valuation.
Yeah.
I think it was over $1 billion. Can you provide us with an update of what the technical valuation was? I think we'd estimated around $800 to $900 million.
So the first thing to say is it hasn't been completed because these things, as you may know, take an inordinately long time. So although the valuation date is as of April 16, we're unlikely to formally conclude the valuation until the back end of the calendar year. However, in terms of where would I suspect that's going to land, I mean, you've quoted $800 to $900 million. I think it's probably going to be at the lower end of that range, maybe even a bit better than that. Now, don't hold me to that because we have to go through the whole valuation exercise with the trustees, but it will certainly be better than the figure of just over $1 billion, which is what it was in 13.
Yep. Okay. And just was that underlying pension one of the key areas? I guess I'm just trying to think of the EV of the business, the enterprise value of the business, with regards to the pension. Is that one of the things that was a key point of discussion with McCormick?
Well, I mean, I mean, candidly, I don't know exactly how they built their models and what they did. I mean, they were, as you know, we allowed them to do due diligence. They were interested in the pension schemes, and we went through it in some detail with them because obviously that's an important consideration.
Yep.
For anybody that looks at Premier. Now, what they took away from that, frankly, I don't know. I mean, where we have always tended to steer people is to say that, you know, one of the numbers that we published, which is just over 400 million, I think sort of 410, 420, is the NPV of the future deficit contributions. And I think given the multiplicity of different ways that you can calculate a deficit, which I can think of at least four or five off the top of my head, I tend to feel that is still a useful number. I know quite a lot of the coverage in the press was based on that sort of basis. And I think that's something which we felt was perhaps the first among a number of possible measures of how you look at the size of the pension challenge that faces the business.
And so, and that 400 to 420 million that you've quoted, I sort of calculated that it was a discount rate of about 11% to get to that number.
No, it's a bit less than that. It's about nine-ish, I think.
9-ish percent. Okay. And that discount rate was chosen just because
It's based on our WACC.
Based on your WACC. Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Sophie Hughes. Please ask your question.
Good morning. Sophie Hughes from UBS.
Hi, Sophie.
Morning.
Hi, morning. I just had a couple of questions. One was, I was wondering if you could give us your impressions on the UK retail outlook, given that some of the branded food manufacturers have talked about perhaps there being slightly less deflation in Europe in H2 of this year. And then secondly, I had a question on the pension. Just beyond 2019, it might be too early to comment, but what should we be penciling in? Could we expect a similar sort of cash charge?
I'll go for the first one then, Sophie. It's Gavin. I think there's a lot of speculation about probably H2 and the first half of next year in UK retail, and quite a wide range of different points of view. Personally, I think that the most important thing I see and continue to see is quite strong volume growth. And that's been a big change, as you know, from maybe 18 months ago. So the consumer is pulling more volume through the UK retail market than they were 18 months and before. And that is a critical factor. That's probably the most critical factor to food manufacturers and food suppliers. Quite what the outlook is for food prices is very, very hard. As you know, it's kind of between 2-3% negative at the moment. In theory, of course, you know, with the euro and the pound and 38-40% of UK food products being imported, you know, there would be an inflationary pressure. And, you know, that goes without saying, just because of the magnitude, quite what the impact of that is and how much of that feeds through the supply chain and whether it's recovered, you know, from consumers ultimately, which is how it would reflect in economic inflation, then, you know, that is a hot subject for debate. I mean, from Premier's perspective, as I said, consciously, we are 95% manufactured in the UK. 89% of all the raw materials and services we buy are in pounds. And so we would be on the kind of sheltered end of that spectrum, and we've hedged for the exposures we have in this financial year anyway.
Pension? I think the short answer is probably yes, Sophie. There is an agreed schedule of contributions from the 2013 valuation that goes right out to the end of the recovery period, which is between 2031 and 2033. Those payments are at broadly similar or somewhat slightly increasing levels. So I haven't got the schedule in front of me, but I mean the 1920 deficit contribution is 44 million. I think that moves up into the 50s during those later years. Now, having said that, of course, that will get those post-2020 years will get reevaluated at least twice until we get there, once on the back of the current valuation. And as we discussed earlier, it looks like the TP position has got better. And then obviously it will be renegotiated again in 2019, and that's really the valuation date that counts. So I think, you know, broadly similar for those later years, maybe drifting up a bit would be a sensible way to look at it. So the full details of those we can give you if you want them. I just don't have them to hand, but they're in the prospectus and the when we did the public disclosures in 2013, so we can give you that. If you wanted it, is public domain information.
Great. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Thank you. We appear to have no further questions coming in at this time. Please continue.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Lawrence. Thank you for everybody else. Exceedingly busy morning. Including the Premier Foods AGM. So that's a good summary. Thanks for your time, and have a good day.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now all disconnect.